Happy Sunday, everybody. A critical episode that happened at our TPUSA Faith Pastors Summit with Dr. James Lindsay. We go deep into the details. I know we just had a recent episode with Dr. Lindsay. This is new stuff that I think you'll really enjoy, and then we take questions from the audience. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up the podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show, and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I know last evening was a wonderful night, and we received some huge feedback. I want to encourage you to also check out all of our sponsors in the hallway and support them. We have an action-packed day in store. I like to kind of block off some periods of time in the schedule to kind of just see what the Lord has in store. And many of you in the hallway were stopping me, and some of you were at CNP, the Council for National Policy meeting back in Florida, where a friend of mine, James Lindsay, and I spoke about the need of distinctions and what is CRT and what is this trans thing. Now, so as you know, this is a pastor's summit, and you know, some people that, let's just say, are more critical than they are. More critical than not. They got really fired up because they said, okay, yeah, it's fine that 99% of all your speakers are Christians and pastors, but why on earth would you have that James Lindsay guy come and speak? And so James Lindsay is not of our faith. He's an agnostic. He's a wonderful man, and he knows the word very well. And I will say this, though. Did every one of you that flew here demand that the pilots that were flying you were of your faith? When you go for brain surgery? When you want to go get an MRI, do you want to? Sometimes there are some people that have some wisdom to share about something really important. And not only is he respectful, he says that without the church, you know, this woke stuff is going to take over everything. He has a PhD in mathematics, actually not too far from here, University of Tennessee. He has dedicated his entire life and his ridiculous intellect to reading every one of their books and understanding what drives this force. Where does it come from? He has a new book out called The Marxification of Education. He has a book out called Race Marxism. He actually wrote a book called Cynical Theories, all about what you're probably dealing with in your seminaries. People are bringing up, you know, the different ideas of post-structuralism and post-modernism. And he's incredibly entertaining. And again, some people and the Christian bloggers that are not big fans of ours are going to be very critical of this. But you know what? I think we should all come with, you know, open ears and open heart and see what does James have to teach us today. Join us in welcoming James Lindsay, everybody. That's my Kool-Aid. James, welcome.
Thank you, Charlie. I brought you some Kool-Aid. Yeah, don't worry, it's not for everybody.
So James, it's an honor to have you here. You know, we received a petition of hundreds of people demanding that we cancel you as a speaker, which I said, they don't know who they're dealing with if they actually think I care about that. So James, welcome. It's an honor. You and I have traveled the country together, done a lot of things together. You have focused your career now on defeating the Marxists and defeating the woke. Tell us about your work and why it's so important that the church rises up.
Well, thanks, Charlie. And of course, you know, and that you all should know, I'm humbled and flattered to be here. I don't take it lightly that I'm invited to this thing that makes the internet very upset, that it's somehow out of character or whatever. I do like coming to things that makes the internet very upset. Don't get me wrong. But I think that we are, I think that we all know that Charlie was very prescient in naming his organization Turning Point, because we are facing a crossroads for America, but also for the American church. And I was talking with Charlie. We did a podcast yesterday, and I pointed out to him that we kind of have this 100-year-long arc that I think is very important for people to understand. So in the 1920s, a Marxist by the name of Antonio Gramsci laid out the plan for how we're going to infiltrate the cultural institutions and take them over from within. This got called the Long March to the Institutions later. Mao Zedong employed something similar, or maybe the same thing in China, and it worked. So it's something very serious. But what he said was that we have to infiltrate the institutions, particularly, he named five, of family, religion, education, media, and law. And you heard religion's right there in the middle. So that's 1920s. So now we fast forward to 2016, which is pretty close to the 2020s. So about a century later, we have Klaus Schwab, the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, saying that, of course, he wants to transform the world to some new economy of sharing and caring, is the most recent quote, whatever that's supposed to mean, communism. And he said that values, what drives a lot of what he does, especially the work of the World Economic Forum, has faith in its crosshairs, says the reason is because values cannot be justified by the intellect alone, that requires faith. Which means they have a deliberate program, and the Marxists have had a deliberate program, to infiltrate the churches, especially the American churches, because they know that they can't take over the United States of America from within unless they take over the cultural institution of the church, which means they have to transform the church to something that it should not be, never was, and never will be if pastors stand up and understand the problem.
Are you saying, James, that there are secular socialists actively funding efforts to take over the American church?
They've been actively funding these efforts for a very long time. They've been trying to find inroads. I mean, there are documents even from the 1950s where they hauled before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. People started to testify, and they started to talk about how the communists at the time, this was the 1950s, they were not that successful in infiltrating the American church, or at least not the Protestant one at that time. And they said that they made these things called sucker lists. And they laughed because they said that pastors can sometimes be the biggest suckers of them all, especially liberal pastors. And they can transform the church from within. So there's been a deliberate strategy, a deliberate enemy trying to take over this church. Now, you mentioned my book, Marxification of Education, for example. And so this is by a guy named Paulo Freire. Paulo Freire, I talked about at the summit last year. Paulo Freire, you'd think it's all about education because his books are things like The Politics of Education, The Pedagogy, that means the theory of teaching, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. These are the kinds of things that he wrote, but his books actually contain entire chapters about the church and about how the church has to be transformed into what he calls the prophetic church, which is described as being prophetic in the sense that it builds the kingdom of God here on earth in solidarity with the oppressed. So in other words, the Christian message, the church itself, has to be transformed, and they've had a deliberate program that they've been running for decades to do that.
And, you know, part of the issue, James, that has surprised so many people, I'm sure, in this room, is the church was not prepared for the kind of mandatory woke pressure that happened in the summer of 2020, right? Where you must now be demanding diversity. I know so many of you in this room, you've been confronted by congregants or board members, and they say, why is it that you don't have people on stage that look like me? Or why is it that you don't have more diversity? How many of you have probably heard this once or twice or three? A lot of hands going up. James, where does this come from? Because this is not Christianity. This is something very dark.
Well, I mean, it comes from Marxism. And so my work over the past maybe 4 to 5 years has been trying to get to the bottom of what Marxism really is about. And Marxism, ultimately, in my opinion, and we talked about this some, we can chat about this if you want, I actually think it was a updating and replacement of the old Gnostic heresies. So the idea is that there's this secret knowledge, and that if we gain this secret knowledge, mankind can save himself from himself. More or less, we can elevate ourselves to the status we shall be as gods. You mentioned Genesis 3 last night.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. And just, James, I want you to slow down. The Gnostic heresies.
Well,
the Protestant church doesn't talk about that enough, honestly. What are the Gnostic heresies?
So in the first and second centuries, there were a number of heretical Christians who set up a bunch of heretical interpretations of Christianity and the gospel and the Bible. At the very bottom, what Gnosticism believes, and this will actually be a great segue to Marxism, believe it or not, because I think it's continuous. But what they actually believe at the bottom is that when we read Genesis and we read about the Creator, that what the Creator actually is a different character entirely. It is not the Almighty God. That they know this secret. It's a secret Gnostic belief that they have. That's a hidden knowledge. There's actually a real God behind the character in Genesis that creates the world. The Creator in Greek is Demiurgos. And so it's the demiurge is the word that they use for this. But the demiurge is actually in the Gnostic faith, an evil demon that's sent to imprison man. And at first in Eden, and then after the snake comes, the serpent comes and tells Eve the truth about the world, imprisons him in the world to suffer all the iniquities. And so if you can gain this secret knowledge of the imprisonment of man, then you can set yourself free. Now, fast forward to from the first and second century. So these are characters like the Sethian cult, the Manichaean cult. Some people have heard of these things. Some people haven't. Valentinian cult is the most famous of them that was put down by Irenaeus. These are things that some people have heard of. We fast forward though to say around 1800. And what we have is some people, some German theologians that are working there in the Swabian region of Germany, of southern Germany. And they have encountered these ideas because they picked up kind of a frisson of cool running through elite circles in Europe for a couple hundred years. A New Age movement took place in the end of the Middle Ages in Europe. A lot of people don't recognize this, but it was literally their New Age movement. But they're hip. Enlightenment times modernists, and they're looking at the world through a modern, not a pre-modern lens. So they're no longer thinking, wow, well, the spirit that's actually animating the world is somehow this, transcendental thing. And they place it instead in social science. It's the social spirit, the Zeitgeist, or the spirit of the times, or the Weltgeist, the spirit of the world in the original German. And so what happens is they start to work out this whole Gnostic concept. But now instead of the Holy Spirit being the Holy Spirit, it's the spirit of all the people moving the world around in trajectory through history. And we have to transform history to what it was intended to be by God, the kingdom of God on earth. And so it turns out that they recreated the entire Gnostic thing, but stuck it in what we would now call sociology and economics. Karl Marx comes along, and this is where it gets really important. And he says, actually, do you know who has this power that's like the demiurge that imprisons the world and oppresses all the people to keep them from being like gods? Well, the gods are the bourgeois class, and they imprison the proletariat. And you get the entire recreation of the Gnostic heresy, but now with social science and economics being the tool. So now that we've slowed down and caught people up, what happens is with Marxism...
Isn't he great, by the way? I mean, is...
So Christians can recognize immediately then that this is satanic, very clearly, right? It is the serpent was telling the truth. Okay, we know who we're dealing with now. And so what we're dealing with Marxism is Marx said, well, what has to happen, just like the Gnostics of old, is they have to awaken to a secret consciousness. He called this socialism, a secret consciousness of how the world works. This is how it actually works. Class consciousness is the first step toward socialist consciousness, is the first step toward true communism.
What did he say? Awaken, woke. That's where the word woke comes from.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you. That's exactly what this is. And then he said what the proletariat, the oppressed, awakened oppressed need to do is seize the means of production. And for a century and a half, we have sat on our hands and not realized. We thought, oh, he means factories. He means farms. And technically he did. But for Marx, the reason that factories and farms and employment and all of these things mattered was because he believed economic conditions determine the character of man. So what he's actually saying is we need to seize the means by which man creates himself. And he's explicit on this in his writings in 1844. It's about how man creates himself, absent God, absent any other form of creation, and the mechanism is economics. So how do we get from there to 2020? Well, that didn't work in the West because, as the communists writing in the middle of the 20th century said, capitalism delivers the goods. In other words, economic conditions don't work as a lever, an Archimedean lever, as they phrase it, to move the West into communism. They don't work. We can actually work hard, apply our talents, and prosper. So you can't use economic conditions to trick the West into this demonic influence. So they have to use other things. So they moved into cultural issues. And so they said, well, you can use race, you can use sexual status, you can use sex and gender, you can use health and ability status, you can use all of these personal identity politics ideas, and we can leverage it that way. So instead now of saying that the world, man is created through economic conditions, they say that racism is systemic and it's upheld by an ideology of white supremacy that pervades everything, and it's the necessity of a racial proletariat, the people of color, to seize the means of cultural production and rise up and overthrow, to take over the production of man. Well, guess what? Like Gramsci said, the church is an overwhelming, powerful, absolutely central means of cultural production and cultural maintenance. So they wanted to come in. So what you faced in 2020 was Marxists who had reappropriated this old Gnostic idea into economics and reappropriated it into race. And then they put you on the spot, not knowing what you were facing, and said, don't you think this church should be a little more diverse? Because they dressed it up in nice, seductive language, you know, like a capital D deceiver might do. And then if you said, well, I don't know, maybe it's a capital A accuser that shows up next and says, well, you're a racist. And you know what you're dealing with if you stop and think about it. But there's this huge historical precedent. We're talking Genesis 3 historical precedent here.
And James and I have really harmonized on this Genesis 1 through 11 theme, which I encourage all of you to really take time with your congregations and do a deep study on it, because in order for the Marxists to succeed, they must obliterate the truths of Genesis 1 through 11. And all of the Bible, I believe, is breathed from God. It's all inerrant. But Genesis 1 through 11 is the ballgame the Marxists find objectionable. They do not believe Genesis 1:1. They do not believe that the universe had a beginning with a purpose. They think it's a series of accidents. They don't believe Genesis 1:26 and 1:27, that human beings are made in the image of the divine. And they certainly, James, do not believe in the distinctions that are set up in the first 11 books of Genesis, the distinction between God and man, the distinction between man and nature. Now, when James is talking about Hermeticism or Gnosticism, the best example of this that will probably connect some dots for you is the heretical gospel of Thomas, where Jesus is everywhere. He's in the stones. He's in the river. He is in nature. Now, one of the themes of Genesis 1 through 11 is an unapologetic argument that God is above nature and he created nature, that God is not within nature. It is different than every other river civilization belief of the Mesopotamians or the Egyptians. They believed that the old gods, actually, you worship the sun, you worship the river, you worship the hills, you worship the mountains. The Torah, the first five books of the Bible, the books of Moses, especially the first 11 chapters of Genesis, are saying, no, God spoke it into existence. There is a hierarchy, and that, in fact, actually we're even above nature. And the distinctions that are set up between the holy and the profane, between good and evil, between man and woman, these distinctions actually keep us free. Distinctions are what is necessary for a civil society to flourish. And James, you have a lot to say about this, because distinctions is actually precisely what the Marxists desire to obliterate.
Well, they have to obliterate distinctions, because the truth is in distinctions. That I am not Charlie is true. We are distinct from one another. That's simply true, that I'm not this chair or whatever else, that I also can't change my sex through any magical alchemical process, as the Target Satanist guy recently put on Instagram. If you didn't know that, he put this graphic designer that's at the middle of all this Target nonsense, evil, not nonsense, all this Target Evil, the graphic designer that's in the middle of it, has on his Instagram a skeleton with a bubbling cauldron and all the cute pink and blue and cute colors, and it says, "Transition is alchemy." And I agree, it is alchemy. It's the hermeticism that Charlie mentioned. And that hermeticism is a Gnostic, not in the strict sense, but in the sense that it has secret knowledge. It is a ancient Gnostic religion that is evil, that seeks to obliterate all distinctions. And in particular, both Gnosticism and Hermeticism, just like Genesis 3 said, seek to obliterate the distinction between God and man. Marx's whole project starts with that man is his own God. Man is his own creator. And thus we can seize the means of creation of man, and we can take man to his to a desired end. For Marx, he says that this is that we're going to remember who we truly are. Well, who is that? He calls it a species being. It's a weird phrase, but what he actually says is it's a purely, perfectly social creature. Man as an individual exists for the species. In other words, as a collective. So we are actually to obliterate the distinctions between one another. So this is what you see in China when Mao was taking over. I've actually been to Beijing and seen some of these posters or murals are still painted on some walls. It says things like man, woman, boy, girl, we are all the same. Obliterating distinctions. Those are some pretty important distinctions, by the way. Dylan Mulvaney is obliterating the same one. He doesn't pose as a woman. He poses as a girl. Man, girl, we are all the same. Think of the implications. You're a smart crowd. Think of the implications of where that goes. Think of the implications of where that goes. Of course a young girl can consent because a 28-year-old man can be a girl.
This is going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years, everybody. Widespread pedophilia justification, and that's not an exaggeration. It's already here in many states. And we got to get more churches to probably speak about that. So, James, but the distinction also between the state and the family.
Absolutely. The public and the private. State and family. What they need to destroy is every single distinction, so that everything becomes a kind of a homogenous mix that's almost homogenous, because they get to sit on top of it, direct where it goes, because of course they're the Gnostics. They're the enlightened elect that know where history is supposed to go so that we can build the kingdom here to complete history. And so they've got to get rid of this distinction between the state and the family so that you can't bring your values to your children. You can't bring the loving bond that's unique between parent and child to your children. And it's going to be replaced by their favorite thing in the entire universe, the amorphous blob that we call the institution, which at its largest in a society is the state, which Hegel, who preceded Marx, said is the divine as it manifests on earth. God, as he exists on earth for this view, is the state.
Now, James, You looking at this from an outsider, would you say clearly this is a theological debate that is occurring without most people and most pastors even realizing it?
It's absolutely a theological debate. It is a debate that's logos versus pathos. It's a debate that's the pathos is emotion. Pathological is a derivative of that word, by the way. It's a debate of truth versus objective truth versus subjectivity, where subjectivity gets to rule. Now, these woke kids, by the way, think that their subjectivity, my lived experience, right? That's their subjective interpretation of, after the Marxists told them what their subjective interpretation is, of what they've experienced in their lives. That's what makes it lived experience instead of just regular experience, is that it's had interpretation added to it. They think that that's king. Let me clue them in. I know they're probably, well, some of them might be hate watching this, but let me clue them in. Their subjective experience, according to what Mao said, is there are different things you do in different phases of the revolution. Once these people take power, true power, their subjective interpretation doesn't matter anymore. So this is a theological debate about objective truth versus, this is the deepest theological debate about objective truth versus subjectivity. Because the people in charge are using the woke right now and their subjective feelings, and then because it's subjective, once they get what they want, they can change what the subjective truths are that matter tomorrow. And then if they don't like those, they can change them next week. And if they don't like those, they can change them again. And this is exactly what history has taught us when these people take over. This is a theological debate, though, that also goes back, just like I mentioned, the first century and second century Gnostics. This is the theological debate that the very heart, this is the very simplest thing, is can man be God? That is the debate. And you all know the answer. But you have to unapologetically say the answer. You have to stand up and say, this is why Charlie and I, despite our religious differences, get along perfectly. Because Charlie, devout as he is, knows he is not God. He's humble before God. I know I'm not God. And I'm humble before whatever the truth is, wherever that may lead me. And I have to put myself down before it because it's a lot bigger and a lot more powerful than I am. This is a very simple premise.
And as James and I joke around when we talk together, we all believe that there is a God and you are not him, right? The people in charge don't believe either of those things. And George Soros, on the record, 60 Minutes, 1992, was asked, what's your belief of God? He said, well, man created God. God did not create man. Plainly and simply, right? And I just want to just reemphasize something James just said. He's pleading with the church to have you tell your congregation that God's in charge. That's the ask. Where are we at, everybody, if that has to be the ask in America, right? Please go back, American church, and say that man did not create God. That's somehow controversial, I suppose. But at the same time, James, the woke cannot coexist with a belief in the transcendent or the divine or a logos.
Well, they're self-transcendent.
Ah.
They are self-transcendent. The goal is actually for them to elevate themselves. Look at what they do with this transition. What do? A delusion comes into your mind. You decide that you're something that you're not. And then you go and try to create yourself into that, right? So you become the author of your own being. Now, there's older terminology for this. If you were to make a child, we know that requires a man and a woman, by the way, here. That's not a negotiable point. If you were to make a child, there's an old word for that, begetting. And so what the woke actually are trying to do is to seize the means of that and to self-beget. They believe that man gets to self-beget on the individual level, but in concert, what's transcendent to them is the collective of humanity. And so the collective of humanity all has to agree about how human beings get to self-beget. And of course, the enlightened Gnostics in charge are going to have us self-beget into socialist man, the perfect species being. Marx wrote about this, by the way. You know this. He said in his critique of Hegel's philosophy of the right, which he wrote at the end of 1843, he wrote that the critique of everything begins with the critique of religion. All true critique begins with the critique of religion, and this is the reason why. That's his famous "Religion is the opium of the masses." And a couple paragraphs down, he says that what religion has done is it has allowed man to put himself around, meaning God, a false son. But what he needs to do is bring it back and make himself his own son that he centers, or that he orbits around himself. So this is their goal. And then what do we end up with? We talked yesterday about Gramsci. I mentioned Gramsci earlier. Gramsci says, 100 years later or thereabouts, or 80 years later, socialism is precisely the religion that must overwhelm Christianity. It's kind of a lie, by the way. It underwhelms it, if you will. It gets in underneath it and infiltrates and transforms it from within. But this is exactly the battle that we're having. This is the exact goal. The criticism of religion, this picking at everything, is absolutely crucial to their agenda.
And this is important. So it's the relentless criticism of institutions that exist. That is the Marxist playbook. Alinsky touched on this a little bit in Solinsky's Rules for Radicals. It's a little incomplete. But I think if you want to know the tactics that they're going to use against you, both on the macro and the micro, just read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, of which the dedication to the book is dedicated to Lucifer. Hillary Clinton wrote her senior thesis. Barack Obama called him my mentor. Saul Alinsky, Chicago community organizer, wrote Rules for Radicals 13. 13 was deliberate, by the way. And I could just name some of them off for you right now. Make the enemy live up to their own book of rules. Keep the pressure on. Find a target. Personalize it. Polarize it. This is what they do every single day. And again, it's not a complete list, not exhaustive, but part of deconstructionism, part of Herbert Marcuse, Michel Foucault, Jacques Derrida, these 1950s, 1960s radicals that infected the baby boomer generation and really changed the ideological and philosophical trajectory of the West, is they believe whatever must exist, what, James, must be relentlessly criticized until you reduce it down to nothing, right? They do that with the family, do that with marriage, they do that with virtue. And their targets right now, this is why we're doing what we're doing. I don't think Christians know how much money, funding, energy, and ferocity is coming towards the church. You might think that, oh, we're fine. You know, we have a great church, 700 people, 800 people, 2,000 people. You know, okay, be careful, because that youth pastor that you might hire that might have went to Calvin College might be a wokey ready as a parasite to come take over your church. And so James, two things. Talk about the relentless criticism. Talk about how sometimes it just takes one wokey bacterial infection to take over a healthy body.
So first thing I'm going to say, actually, is I don't get to do this often, so I'm going to relish the moment. I get to correct the brilliant Charlie Kirk. I get to correct you. The actual word that, I mean, he's not wrong, relentless criticism, all that exists, but the actual quote from Marx is ruthless criticism.
Okay, well, forgive
that's me, what
everybody.
They're going to do
all
to
right.
your.
But I was close, though.
But this is true. You need to understand how this is a true, this is a distinction. I'm holding you to your own rules. Now, this is a.
He's using Alinsky on me. It's
this,
really
is a this is an important distinction, though, because ruthless is their attitude. Ruthless is their attitude. Okay? And so that is exactly how they proceed. By the way, there's an update. If you want to go, you can find Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals online for free. You should read it. You should understand the tactics of the people trying to come after you. There's an updated version that's called Beautiful Trouble. It's a lovely graphic book online. It's beautifultrouble.org. If you want to understand their strategies and how they try to provoke you, what their principles are, a principle, for example, is your target's reaction is your real action. In other words, they're trying to provoke you all the time. Another principle, if we go back, whether it's Marcuse does it in 1972, whether it's Gramsci does it, whether you see it in Beautiful Trouble, the idea is that you're actually supposed to, and this is what you're asking me about, the infiltration of, you say, the parasite. And so in 2000, it's too bad we're not in Arizona for this. I love when we're actually in Phoenix for this. In 2014, there was a paper written, 16 maybe, there's a paper written at Arizona State University, which is why I love to do it in Phoenix, that's titled Women's Studies as a Virus. That's the title of this paper. And they explain that their strategy is actually modeled ideally off of the concept of a virus. And what they say is that you imagine that you have, they for whatever reason pick a male student, but you have a student learning women's studies as elective courses in colleges and universities. And they give the example, maybe he's majoring in biology. Okay. And they say that the virus is the ideal metaphor. The examples of viruses that they compare themselves to in the favorable are AIDS, because it suppresses the immune system, Ebola, and SARS. They said also that viruses that cause cancer represent, and this is the word of the year, isn't it? True transformational change. And what they say is you take that student and you get him to take a few women's studies classes so he gets the ideology in him. And then when he graduates with his degree in biology and he goes off to a graduate student department, or he graduates and he goes off to a lab, he brings that and infects the new cell, whether it's a new academic department, whether it's a laboratory, whether it's a workplace. This is not something the church is magically immune to. If there is no discernment, they understand perfectly well that if they were to, say, bring critical race theory and intersectionality, maybe even elements of queer theory, into the seminaries and train up pastors and youth pastors in these ideologies while they get their otherwise maybe sound theological teaching, that they're going to be able to go get hired by churches and act as viral carriers, as disease vectors to bring the ideology into your church, into your community around your church. And this is so explicitly their strategy that not only have they written it down over many books, over many years, over an entire century, but they actually wrote a paper and said the best way to think of ourselves is as a virus that infects institutions. You know what they said about conservatives in that paper? There's a couple paragraphs. Conservatism, they said, is like the immune system. So that's why it's so important that we, and they, and this is their words, that's why it's so important, they said, that we suppress it. Because most of the time, the disease might infect the host, and if the immune system doesn't work, then the host will die. But in this case, they don't explain how, by magic, one might, hermetic magic, alchemy, transition is alchemy, you might suppose. They say, in this case, the disease will actually benefit itself and the host if the immune system is prevented from keeping it out. That is their mentality. So when you look at the attacks that are coming on your church, some of them are going to come very vigorously from without. Others are going to come very, very subversively from within. And when the idea, the strategy is to get you divided and arguing over these things inside your church, so when the external pressure comes, they can crack you like an egg. It's also to get the fight to happen in the church, so when that external pressure comes, you have the guy. Remember, your target's reaction is your real action. So you have the guy that just finally gets mad and throws his foot down as, I'm not doing this in my church anymore. This is, you know, we're not having people like this in our community, which he obviously means Marxists. The media is not going to take it that way. They're going to take it as, these white supremacists don't want black people in their church. He said, we don't want people like this in our community. And that's exactly the game they play on you again and again and again. So they're provoking you and subverting you from within. Then they apply the pressure from without, and very, very few things can withstand that.
And this is my fear for many of you. Many of you have growing churches because you were bold and courageous the last 18 months. That means you're hiring more staff. And that means you're hiring 23, 24-year-olds, and they look great, right? And they come, they might be a worship leader, worship director, they might be a youth pastor. Do you really know what they believe on this stuff? Do you really know what they believe on critical theory? Are they gonna be a group text message to all the other younger people and the singles ministry saying, oh yeah, that's Pastor Steve up there. He's just doing his thing again as they're subterraneanly, because they're trying to do this like a virus, to deconstruct, to challenge. And you might say, oh, I got it under control. I could list you 30 pastors that lost their positions in the last year because they thought they had their church under control, and a board schism or a youth pastor or worship director. And they said, oh no, but we got to grow more campuses. I have more fear for those of you that are growing right now, because you're going to have to be expanding, and they will infiltrate because they have taken over what? The feeding institutions. 95% of seminaries in this country have been captured by the woke. Completely captured. And you might say that's an exaggeration. You got to trust me on this, everybody. It is beyond anything you could imagine. And so, but James, you hit it perfectly. So what is the best disinfectant to the parasitic bacterial infection that tries to take over the church?
It's truth. It's truth and distinctions. You absolutely have to stand in those things. It's also knowledge. You will be subverted if you don't know how you're going to be subverted. And let me just add to what Charlie just said. If you took a stand in the last 3 years and your church is growing, you know how communists work. They make lists. You're not just susceptible. You're a target. You are something that they know that they have to put energy and effort into, either to get your church to get subverted from within. What do they always do? They either transform it to one of theirs or they destroy it. So it's either going to be that, or they're going to get somebody, they're going to work you guys up into some kind of a reactionary moment to do something stupid. And the next thing you know, you got the IRS saying that you're a hotbed of domestic extremism, or you got the DOJ saying you're a hotbed of domestic extremism, barking down your neck. And then that's not going to stick to just you. It's going to be Christianity at large is going to have that stuck on them as well. So you've got to be extraordinarily vigilant. You've got to know the truth. The harder job is ours. They only tear down. We have to preserve and defend while also doing our regular job. You have to know the scripture. You have to preach the scripture. You have to bring them to the truth. You have to encourage. You have to do all of these things. But at the same time, you have to know how they operate. You have to understand what they're going to do so that you can be discerning. And you can see when that youth pastor or whatever it is says the first thing, then now you got your eye on him. And then when he says the second thing, and you've got to start having strategies for how you're going to deal with him. Are you going to get rid of him? You know he's going to make a stink. You know he's going to be a problem if you do. Turns out, P.S., if you want to figure out how to get rid of these people, saddle them with responsibility and hold them accountable to it, and they all leave. Do you want more diversity in this place? Okay, it's your job. It's your job, and you're out in 3 months if you can't get it. Go find it. And they quit. They all quit. Give them responsibility and accountability, and they are out the door, going to go find a more susceptible host. They're going to go find a cell with a dysfunctional immune system to go infect.
And I could tell you the healthiest churches, I see so many here, and you're going to hear from them all throughout today of pastors. The healthiest churches have elder boards and they have congregations where they know what they stand and why they stand for. There's no mystery. And my challenge for some of you, if you're here and you're attending, and this might, you know, frighten you, what James is saying, like, wow, that's a threat. And if you're not yet speaking out on this stuff, then it's going to take you by surprise. And people say, well, I never knew where we stood on these issues, and because it's going to come and it's not going to end. And this is a good segue. Then let's do some questions, James. We're about to enter Pride Month, right? Oh, yeah. And they're going to put you all on defense in Pride Month. This is what they do. Your reaction is what? It's their
primary action.
Is their primary action. So they're going to create fake and synthetic circumstances at some of your big churches, right? Where they'll artificially bring a trans person and they'll say, what's your reaction? And if you do not have a good way to respond to that lovingly and truthfully, they'll film it and put it on the internet and you'll have protests outside. If you think I'm kidding, this is how they operate. These are trained agitators and activists. And so James, Pride Month, I think Pride is a sin, reclaim the rainbow. We talked about all that, yeah. But you have an interesting theory that, and this is our last point, then we'll do some questions, that they actually want a drag Floyd situation. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that there's a – now, let me be very clear, because media matters and these guys go nuts every time I say this. I mean, Charlie and I talked about it at AmFest in December, and Media Matters had an article out before we got off stage. It was amazing. They were so upset. That's incredible turnover. Just so fast. They were so mad. So I know what I'm saying is probably based in truth because they reacted so quickly. But the fact of the matter is, to be careful, your typical drag queen out there dancing around and doing these provocations. And by the way, Christians, the LA Dodgers story already tells you who they're going to try to provoke into radical action. They're going after Christians. Expect a lot of insults to your faith over the next 2 months.
This is an intentional provocation, everybody.
Intentional provocation. Because the powers that be, and I don't think it's necessarily the guy on the ground in a dress and a wig or whatever, the powers that be would love nothing better than a reactionary moment where somebody loses it, lays hands on, or a fist on, or worse, a drag queen in this country. And all of a sudden, you guys saw in 2020 what happens when they find the perfect sympathetic story with the enemy that they've ginned up. In that case, it was the police. In this case, it will be conservative Christians or conservatism across the board. You can guarantee that if they can find a sympathetic story with a martyr at the center of it, with the big scary boogeyman that they've worked up as the monster that caused it, that we're going to have another summer of, I think the word is love, but that's how they use the word love.
Yeah, summer of drag. Right?
It's going to be summer of drag disaster. It's going to be, this is why I call it Drag Floyd. Everything in some sense or another that followed George Floyd, and I'm not talking about necessarily the riots. Maybe those things will happen. Watching every institution you can imagine bend at the knee and get down on their hand. You're going to see Dan Cathy washing the high heels of a drag queen if this happens.
He runs Chick-fil-A, which none of you guys should, but Chick-fil-A's gone totally woke.
Because they are going to bend every knee. And so you're going to watch every knee and every institution bend to the pressure that they create if we fall for this provocation. And you as pastors have a very strong obligation to pastor your flock to minimize the chance that that happens in your community. And let me add to this, because I get accused of this a lot. I'm not saying go into inaction. I'm not saying sit on your hands. I'm not saying anything like that at all. I'm saying that there is a difference between strategic action and the reaction they're trying to provoke. And if you have discernment and you can tell distinctions, you're going to figure out what that is. And you're going to take loving Christian action in response, not wild, provoked action. Like I told Charlie yesterday, these provocations are hideous. The average American sees that they're hideous. Almost every Christian that's not woke Christian sees that they're hideous. And they stay hideous, and they hurt the left until they look sane by comparison to the reaction they generate.
Well, and you look at this, right? The left's current regime, the secularists, they thrive on misrepresented viral moments that the media then, like the subway situation, the woman with the bike in New York City, Covington kids with Nicholas Sandman, Kyle Rittenhouse, Floyd. realize you're living through a mass Operation Mockingbird intel agency creation to manipulate your emotions, the pathos against your logos, to get you to do something out of fear, not of rationality or truth. How many of these viral moments do we have to see that are then configured, edited, add sound with before we realize that they're playing with us to try to change the society? So be ready for that in the next month. Okay, let's
do
some questions.
You guys all know, just as a, this is a parallel. You guys all know that you're not going to go attack an abortion clinic to stop abortion. You're going to stand outside of it and pray. Why can't the protest, if there's going to be a protest at all for these, and maybe it's held at your church and not on site where something stupid could happen, or a provocateur or an embedded Fed or something could pull a false flag.
There will be a Ray Epps at this drag stuff, everybody.
Why not pray for them? Why not make it clear that you're praying for them? Peacefully, we're praying for these people to come back to peace, to come back to truth. We're praying for them to overcome the delusions of their minds. We're praying for their health and prosperity. We're praying for our country. These kinds of things, when you read that you should turn the other cheek, this is what is meant, if I might be so bold. You've insulted me here. Go ahead. Insult some more. Show everybody what a monster you are. And they lose when that happens.
Beautiful. Let's do some questions. We have some mic runners. Well, let's get to as many as possible, and raise your hand if you have a question. So we will start here. Yes.
Hello, my name is Robert Ewells, and James, I met you and last year at the Pastors Conference, and thank you so much for what you're doing. I've probably listened to 300 hours of your New Discourses podcast, and pastors, you need to listen to his New Discourses podcast every day, if not several times a week. You have helped me understand sincerely what's going on. My little church meets in a plaza, and we're two doors down from a gay bar. We have church service at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., and their drag show contest starts around 5:30. So when we're getting out of church, there they are sometimes prancing through the parking lot. And you guys have so opened my eyes. One thing you really helped me with, because we do a lot of demonstrations, pro-life demonstrations, cultural warrior type demonstrations. Would you please address Darvo? Because you really helped me understand why they're trying to tick us off, and what they want is for us to lay one finger on them, and then it's us who will be in trouble. You just briefly introduced it a few minutes ago. If you talk about Darvo and what that stands for, I think that would help everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you for that. Yeah, they have a number of tactics and strategies and tools that they use. One of them is this kind of provocation. They actually call it mid-level violence. They want to get you to either do nothing, which you cannot do, or to overreact, which you also cannot do, because they'll use it against you, because their real action is your reaction. And then if you react, DARVO is an acronym. This actually comes from abuser psychology. Like, if you read a domestic abuser, a psychotic husband is abusing his wife, and the wife says, "You're abusing me." He goes into what's called DARVO. It's an acronym. It stands for deny, attack, and reverse the roles of victim and offender. So this is what will happen to you if you react. They will deny that they did any kind of provocation. They will attack you for having been there in the first place, and then they're going to say that they are the victim and that you are actually the offender. They're going to reverse roles.
Sounds like Kyle Rittenhouse, doesn't it?
It's exactly what happened with Kyle Rittenhouse. It's exactly what happens again and again, and it's exactly what will happen to you if there's a reaction. So, you know, if you're in the situation of this kind, again, the provocation is there. They have the upper ground. If you walk out and either completely indifferent, like it's not happening, or you just keep your head down and pray, or you pray in a small vigil or whatever. These things are very, very powerful, not passive actions. I don't know what the right word is for this. Passive resistance actions that make them look foolish. You always want to reveal the fact that they, in fact, are the fool, and that you, in fact, are not the fool. And if you're based in the Lord, then that shouldn't be that hard, because you have truth on your side.
Amen. I agree, James. You should say that more often.
I have a lot of things about this. Let me give you another one, because this comes up. Sorry, but I don't want to. This comes up a lot. A lot of people are very discouraged. They're like, I hear this every day. James is too late. James is too late. And you know what? How much I love if it's a Christian who says it. When other people say it, I've got to have this whole like thing. If a Christian says this to me, I'm not being glib. I honestly, genuinely mean it. I'm speaking into their beliefs. Why on earth would you doubt God's timing? Have you not read Esther? Are you not here for such a time as this? This is so, so important for why the church is a unique element in being able to stand up to this. Because you have these teachings, you have these beliefs. That is what we're here at this conference to learn to do.
And I said once, I said, I wish more pastors had as much scriptural knowledge and clarity as James Lindsay. And I got attacked like you wouldn't believe, but I will say it again. All right, next question.
All right. My name is Grant Raphael. I'm from Hammond, Louisiana, and I'll be running for a state representative next election cycle.
Good for you.
And I also wanted to say I'm part of an organization called Louisiana Family Forum. And so what we do in Louisiana, we bring a bunch of pastors to the Capitol. We kind of show them the process of how bills are made, how they're voted on. We introduce people to your legislators, your senators, your representatives on the local districts. And I think it's a big deal because when we talk about Christians and pastors stepping into the gap, we tend to think about it on a federal, national, big-time level. But what about our school boards? What about our districts that we're in? And so my question for y'all is, what do y'all recommend for us where we're coming from all different states, all different areas? When we go back home, how do we make that difference on our local school boards and districts?
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for that question. Thank you for running to serve your community. And that's something people can do, is they can start thinking about serving the community. You actually already said, I belong to this organization. These organizations can be started. You might be the one that plants the organization. And then I say this all over. I don't usually say this for pastor groups or whatever, but I say this to political type people and to moms. I work with Moms for Liberty a lot, for example. And I tell them, what do average moms do? What do average pastors do? You know, I said earlier that you have to learn kind of how the woke think. Read Rules for Radicals. Read Beautiful Trouble. Read some of their theories. See what's in their head. Understand their mentality. You need to learn to read legislation. You can't hold your lawmakers accountable. You can't bring your biblical view to the state house if you don't know how to read legislation. It's legalese. You can learn how to read it, or somebody can. You guys meet for Bible studies in small groups. You can meet and study the founding documents of the United States. You can meet and study the founding documents of your state. These are actual civic duties. There's no reason why you can't have a book club that focuses on the Declaration of Independence next week, for example. Or not just at your Bible study, let's turn around and let's read the Constitution a little bit at the end and just see, you know, maybe you separate the two, whatever you do. These are things that you can do to start getting that civic engagement and to get that level of information up so that you can, when you join these groups or found these groups, you can start showing up and showing up informed and showing up useful. Because the legislative process, all these civic processes are slow and horrible and messy on purpose so that we don't lose control of our republic. And so you've got to stay on the ball. You've got to get organized. You've got to have these organizations. You've got to get money behind them. You've got to start showing up and showing up with information and understanding of the process. I listened to Byron Donald's talk a few weeks ago, and he straight up said, if you don't stay honest, we will lose track of it. There's too much going on. If you think something's important in legislation, you need to get in there and be in there all the time. But you got to be informed. If you're just some hillbilly showing up, it's not that good.
Two quick things. TPSA Faith exists to help you guys better educate and empower, and I encourage you to follow up with your representative, and we'll be talking about that throughout. I think you'll be blessed by it. But the second thing is, every one of you that are leading your congregations, you have to incorporate some sort of a civic ministry or a go-to item on weeknights, once a month, once a quarter, where you are presenting these ideas and you are challenging your congregation to stay locally involved. It is not the most important thing your church will do, but it is very important, okay? You need to be clear about the hierarchy, but it is very, very important. Jesus is number one, and then you could decide where this comes down on the list, but to say that there is no place for it is incorrect theologically and I think spiritually. Thank you so much. Next question.
Yes, my name is Billy Dawes. I'm one of those pastors that experienced an avalanche of wokeism and lost my position in the church. Basically, I was discovered in Home Depot without a mask on. My question is, we're hearing a lot about boycotts now. Target, Disney, now I find out Chick-fil-A, I can't get my chicken there anymore. We've tried boycotts before. What's going to make this any different? Do you recommend it? Is that something that we need to be supporting?
So two things. The economy is in a far more fragile state than it was a couple years ago. So profits are shrinking. And so any boycott is actually felt more right now by corporate America. That's number one. Number two, what makes this different? I mean, Target's a $108 billion company with 1,358 stores across the country. They're holding emergency meetings. They never should have said that, because now all of a sudden we're like, now there's blood in the water. Now we realize that we can go after you. And I'll be honest, what's different, and it is two things are different. I think that the attitude, the spirit, the ethos, and the vigor of decent, ordinary people is we are just so fed up and we're finally willing to draw a line. I really see that. I did not. It is a legitimate attitudinal shift that I did not see 5 years ago that I now see amongst a lot of people. And the second part of this that I think is really important is that it involves children, and it just, there's a much more tribal reaction when it involves children, which I fully support, by the way. Where if you're going to, and James can riff on this for a second, I think he should, it is not a mistake. It is a strategy with precision to go after the grooming of children. This is a movement of perverts who want to initiate your children away from a family bond into sexual encounters before they realize what's happening. James, am I being hyperbolic when I say that?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, you've said it well. I don't need to belabor the point, but that's exactly what the program is. And of course, it's designed to try to provoke a response that they can weaponize against us. Now, breathe a little easier about Chick-fil-A, because I got worse news for you that'll exonerate them a little bit. What you're about to find out is that shorter like In-N-Out Burger, every corporation's woke. They're all woke. So our boycotts actually should be targeted, and they create pressure. Now,
this is Alinsky. Keep the pressure on.
That's right. So we've got a handful of these. We're pressuring them hard. We are not going to be able to successfully boycott every company, by the way. And you're going to find out that the vast majority of companies are participating in this. That makes the game something different. And they are starting to see that we're in a different place. We're not just more willing to draw the line, though. We actually know what's going on. 2 years ago, if I sat in front of you, maybe 1 year ago, and I said the letters ESG, I got 20 minutes of explaining to do. And right now I say it, and most of you know, this is some kind of weird scoring thing that these big entities and the globalists are using to mess around in the country. Well, what it is it's a social credit system that's working a cartel on our corporations, which means we see this very clearly in how it works. The Bud Light protest or boycott actually exposed how it works, which means there's every reason in the world to start talking to your lawmakers and start talking to your attorneys general to start putting the pressure. Get these executives. Why did you do this? See if you can get them to talk. We are actually moving up the chain to be able to break the system that they are using. Our corporations, some of them, I want to bring you a perspective shift. You think that your corporation betrayed you. I want you to imagine that you got a 15-year-old son, and you live in a neighborhood in 1984 or something like this in New York City, and it's run by a heroin dealer, and the dealer knocks on your door and says, your boy is going to go sell this for me. That's the position most of these corporations are in. They are held hostage to a cartel logic. We want to release, to free up, I don't want to use the word liberate, American productivity and growth again. We want to break the cartel. So if we put pressure on Anheuser-Busch, and Anheuser-Busch happens to lose its little score, all of a sudden its corporate equality index score and its ESG rating, all of a sudden Senator Cruz can haul them in front of the Senate like he wants to and start asking pointed questions that reveal the whole scam. So we are in a different knowledge position, not just a different cultural attitude, which means that we can act not just reaction, but with smart strategic action. Yes. That might end this thing. And it's a very different place to be. But you can have your chicken. They're all woke.
Find positive alternatives at publicsq.com, Public Square app. Every one of you should download the Public Square app. They have tens of thousands. It's a business directory of Christian patriotic businesses. It's publicsq.com. Download the app. It is free. They're growing like crazy. They vet the companies. The guy behind it's a dear friend. He's a believer. He actually goes to Pastor Jurgen's church, who's here somewhere. Publicsq.com. Okay, this will probably be the final question because I'm going to try to stay on time.
My name's Chad Green. I'm a school board trustee at McKinney ISD in the state of Texas. The only constitutionalist on the board. We now have, after this last election, 340 constitutionalists in the state of Texas that are serving on school boards and trying to take those boards over. So your staff member asked me to announce this. We just in the last 30 hours passed the chaplain's bill in the state of Texas. It is going and committed by the governor to be signed. We will have chaplains in every elementary school, middle school, and high school in the state of Texas. Woo! as well as HB 900 that prevents all sexually explicit material from coming into the school, has been approved and is going to the governor's desk. And then SB 15 was passed that restricts the NCAA from allowing transgender athletes to compete against their counterparts, and refuses to allow state schools to give scholarships to transgender athletes. So my question is, being a chaplain, and we have so many pastors here, this is so encouraging because we're, you know, just last night I'm sitting down at dinner, I'm getting strategies of people that are being successful out there and impacting their community. Is there something that we can all do together to put together a training for pastors on, hey, you need to have a legislative committee. Here's how you set this up. Here's who you contact to learn about how to read these things. Here's the other actions you can do within the school. Can we do that?
Just make sure you come to the afternoon sessions because we got David Barton, we have Rick Green, we got Rob. They're going to walk through some of the details of that. And you're right. And that's what we want to try to offer you. And we won't have time to go through all of it. But the buffet line will only increase, in with really amazing options throughout the afternoon. So I'm sorry we're out of time. We can't get to all the questions, but James, any closing thoughts here?
Yeah. I want to end on that note of encouragement. Listen to all these things that are getting passed, but even more importantly than all the successes legislatively, 340 constitutionalists are now on boards in the state of Texas. Everybody got discouraged after the red wave allegedly didn't materialize in the election last year. But if you stop and think about it and you stop and you look at where it matters at these local, these grassroots level elections, there was a gigantic red wave. There was a gigantic wave to try to take this country back to the hands of good people that are under, you know, your pastorage or whatever it happens to be, if it's at your church, that are stepping up and getting civically active again. So this is an incredible opportunity not to get discouraged, to feel very encouraged, and to step into the role of how are you at your church going to nourish the next guy who's going to step up into one of these roles? How are you going to make sure that when he takes this role, this is something Charlie and I have talked about a lot, that what you do with civil power as a Christian is that you serve. And you know what the order of the serving is, but that you're going to keep that servant mentality clear. This is a role that every pastor can be doing to make sure that you're raising up the generation of grassroots leaders that are going to work their way up and going to be the state leaders. They're going to work their way up and get into the federal apparatus. And we're going to long march our way right back to a glorious nation.
James, I just want to say, I think I speak for everybody here. You're very special and you blessed us this morning. And God bless you, James Lindsay. Thank you, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.